Coming to the end of chapter 13 in Matthew's Gospel, we conclude the series of parables. I've explained over the last 2 weekends the meaning of the parables, why they are used, and I'll just remind you that parables, they point to something more. They point to something other. So what you're hearing is just in one sense dressing up what is deeply behind. There are two things that we're asked to do, or the crowds were asked to do, and therefore we are asked to do, is to use our imagination and to listen. And the previous 2 weeks, Jesus inserts those words in, listen those that have ears. Now, at the end of today's gospel, we have the quote there by Jesus where he says, "Well then, every scribe who becomes a disciple of the kingdom of heaven is like a householder who brings out from his storeroom things both new and old." As I look at those words, that is the reason, if you like, behind Matthew's entire gospel. Matthew wrote his gospel at about 85 AD. St. Paul wrote his letters starting in 49 AD and finished in 64 AD. Mark wrote his gospel at 70 AD, at the time that the temple in Jerusalem was destroyed. So 15 years after that, Matthew wrote his gospel. And he wrote it probably in southern Turkey, at a place we know as Ephesus, not far from Gallipoli, actually. And who he wrote it for, as I have mentioned previously, was mainly for Judeo-Christians. So they were certainly followers of Christ, followers of the way, but they had now started to leave the synagogue behind. And in fact, for the main part, they'd been kicked out of the synagogue. But Matthew's entire gospel, unlike Mark's, Matthew's entire gospel, it makes sure that he links that of the what we're going to call the Old Testament to this of the New Kingdom. So the old commands, the new command. Adam, Jesus. That's what Matthew's gospel is about. That's the strategy he's using. So most scholars suspect that when it says the scribe who brings out of his storeroom new things and old, that scribe is probably Matthew. He's talking about himself there. Because what he does in his gospel is he does bring the old with him. That's why he starts off with Jesus' heritage, his heritage from David. And then he brings in new things. He introduces Jesus' preaching, his ministry of teaching and healing, ultimately salvation. But today, it's not addressed to the disciples, his intimate group. It is addressed, those words, to the crowds. So Matthew is now finishing one section of his whole gospel. But he finishes up by using three little parables in there. And the first one, of course, is the treasure in the field. The second one is the pearl of great price. And the third one is the fisherman. So you've got those three images, which are very typical. The first two basically have the same message behind them. But the third one doesn't. The third one is different again. The third one, the third parable about the fisherman sorting the good from the bad, restates something that Matthew has already said in his gospel. And that is, not one crossed letter, not one dot will be removed from the old law as it is replaced with, as Jesus is among us. It will not be removed. So he's highlighting the old and the new. And that's why he finishes up with that statement I just said a minute ago, the householder bringing out things new and old. And to emphasise that a little more, he says, the fishermen, they'll get the fish and they'll keep the good ones in the basket, and the ones that are of no use, they'll throw back. The ones that are of no use are the ones that are designated by the law in Leviticus. And so they are the ones that Jews are not allowed to eat. They are things from the sea that have no scales and have no fins. They're not kosher, if you like. So Matthew has put that in there because that is the old law and it's not thrown away. And then there's the new, which is reiterated primarily in the second reading there, St. Paul writing to the Romans, which is that God cooperates with all of those who love him. Now, Jesus, as the face of God, the very presence of God among them, so this is highlighted by not just good fish, but it's highlighted by the first two parables there, the treasure and also the pearl of great price. Using, as we listen, using our imagination, we delve around that and say, what is the pearl of great price? Well, you'll have to answer that yourself. Most of us would probably come to a conclusion after some time that the pearl of great price is for me, it is my faith in God, that whose face I have never seen, yet I believe and I love. So that's the pearl of great price that is being given to me. And Jesus is saying in the parable, once you've discovered him, you would get rid of everything else in your life. But I, using my imagination, not just listening, delve a little deeper sometimes and I think, well, if you found this pearl of great price and it was a pearl person from Jesus' time, how would you survive? Because you've sold everything and you've just got this pearl, this physical thing. So it's got to mean more than that. And then I dig around with the field, excuse the pun, and I think, so this person has found a treasure and then they bury the treasure again and then they buy the field. They sell everything and buy the field. So if they found the treasure and then bury it, obviously they're not on their land. They don't own the treasure. They have come across it. And here's me using my imagination. So if he's burying it again, it's because he knows that it's not his. It is. It's going to belong to somebody else. And then once again, we said, it's the only part in the parable that says, but he goes away happy. The Greek word that's in there is actually, he goes away with great joy because he's found this. But he too is told to sell everything. So perhaps our imagination or my imagination goes too far. Why would he do that? Why would he bury it and then sell everything and buy it again? And then I have to remind myself that it's a story. Look behind the story. Don't overanalyze it, Richard. Look behind the story. So what's the field? You know, we are this field. All of us, the community. The treasure of course, is discovering Jesus Christ in our life. And all we're simply saying is when he says sell everything, he says put everything else aside. Nothing is more valuable than what you have now received. That's the bottom line of the parable. It's not that hard for those two. And the third one, as I said, is a tool that Matthew uses to bring the old and the new together. And that's why he closes it by actually saying new things and old. So if we look into our own life, our young life or our not so young life, and we see how are we today in our relationship with God and with others. If we look at that, and we think that we are doing okay because I don't interfere with anybody else's life, but I'm still feeling as though I'm on my own, then we have not sold everything. We have not given ourselves completely over to God. There are things in our life that drag us down, that we just hang on to, and those are the things that hold us back from being fully joyous. Those are the things that hold us back from celebrating our relationship with God. Because if we had a full, loving relationship with God, we would not be worried about anything else in the world. But we are, partly because we're human and partly because the world is so big at times and we feel so small. Well, when we find this treasure, we are raised up, we are puffed up. we are blown up to something which is enormous, enormously valuable in God's eyes. But sometimes we just don't believe it because we use the word but or what if. Our imagination can lead us off the track, and our imagination can keep us on track using the parables. But when we bring our imagination together with listening to God in our life, truly listening, well, then we start to have a clearer way ahead. One of the challenges for us as we dig in the field or we go fishing for pearls or other fish is that we get so distracted because we overanalyze, as I said before. The message is really quite simple. We take the things that we have learnt through the journey of our life, the old. Then we use from the first reading, the wisdom. All I want, Lord, is to have a heart of understanding. That's what Solomon asked God for. I just want a heart of understanding so that in my life I can discern and understand the good from the bad and then make a wise choice. As we draw this section of Matthew's Gospel together, it's the fifth section. So these first five sections in Matthew's Gospel reflect the first five books of the Old Testament, actually. So as we draw that to a close, we think, all of us at this time, of the journey of our life, those things that are of the old, and what is new for us, the things that are new for us, the things that give me a deeper understanding and appreciation of my love of God. If you struggle with that, then you might like to start to learn to truly love your neighbour. Then wisdom will be revealed.